Welcome to episode 108 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for Monday, September 22nd, 2008. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Well, it's that time of year again. It's day one of the Interbike Outdoor Demo. I'll be here in Las Vegas all week covering the industry's most important annual trade show. I'll have interviews, bike tests, and a little bit more all week long, starting with today, Outdoor Demo Day 1. I've got 6 interviews for you that I know you're going to enjoy. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. This episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by listeners just like you, listeners who've gone to www.thefredcast.com and have clicked the link to provide donations via PayPal. Every little bit that you provide helps pay for bandwidth, travel expenses to places like Las Vegas, and just generally supporting the show. Thank you so much for your support. It is appreciated. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. It's great to have you with me. And maybe you're a new listener to the show, and maybe you've never heard the word Interbike before, and that's okay. Let's just talk a little bit about what Interbike is. Well, Interbike takes place every year in September here in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's held at the Sands Convention Center for 3 days. Well, then why is it 5 days? Well, a number of years ago, they decided that instead of just having a static indoor display, just like every other trade show that you could go to in the world, whether you're in the air conditioning business or the apparel business, whatever it is, they felt that bike dealers and the media could get a lot out of the opportunity to try out the new products in the bike business. And so originally it was called the On Dirt Demo, now called the Outdoor Demo, and it's held in Boulder City, Nevada, not far away from Hoover Dam, at a place called Bootleg Canyon. Once again, trade only. Unfortunately, no consumers allowed. You've got to have a badge for the show, which really is too bad because it really gives you the opportunity to try out virtually every new product, every new bike, shoe, lots of different products in the industry. You get 2 days to try them out both on a road course and on an off-road mountain bike course. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, believe it or not. It gets quite hot. Thankfully, everybody provides food and hydration, and everybody's able to make it through the desert heat. And that's what we did today. Today was day one. There's only 2 days of the outdoor demo. Tomorrow will be day two. We'll have our tour of Lake Mead, which is really more of an industry hammer fest than anything else, a chance to prove that you're faster than the guy from the other company. And then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will be indoors at the Sands Convention Center adjacent to the Venetian right there on the fabulous Las Vegas Strip. And we'll be enjoying the indoor portion of Interbike 2008. And I will be bringing you daily coverage of all of the goings-on here at Interbike throughout the week, plus some additional things going on. So if you'll stay tuned until the end of today's show, I'll have some program notes for you to let you know of a couple of things that you can get involved in that we are doing here at the Fredcast and the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. So stick around to the end of the show, let you know how you can get involved in what we're doing here at the show. Well, unfortunately, I got a bit of a late start today, so I've only got a couple of interviews for you and really didn't have a chance to try out a whole lot of bikes today, so I'll be able to bring you more bike information tomorrow. But I did have an opportunity to do about 6 interviews that I think you're going to find very interesting, a number of different bike brands and some other things that were going on out there. And of course, we started today with our friend and fellow spokesman, Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles. For those of you who don't listen to the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast, Tim had a bad crash several months ago out on the track. He was racing his bike, and really, we were all quite worried about him for a long time. So it was good to see Tim, and it seemed to me that this was the best place to start. So here's my interview with Tim and others, but don't forget to stick around till the end of the show.
Well, if it's the outdoor demo, I must be in the Mozzie booth talking to the Mozzie guy himself, Tim Jackson. First question, how are you feeling?
Not bad. You know, all things considered, being able to stand up and walk around and be here to do this is a blessing in itself. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to complain at all.
And I'm looking at him, and he looks pretty good. So considering having a near-death experience, you look good.
Thanks. Yeah, everything's where it's supposed to be. The thumb is still attached. The knee still works. Things are coming along. Yeah, exactly. I actually got to ride for an hour last night when we got here. Got to finally test ride the new Scandium bike, so that was nice. That was really nice.
So, and even with all that hospital and bedtime, you have a whole stable full of new bikes. And we were talking about your Solville 10-speed.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
That is built off the exact same frame as the original Solville, but essentially just geared out. So where the single-speed, three-speed, and seven-speed version of the Solville are more dedicated to being, you know, cafe bikes, cruising down the street to the coffee shop, the 10-speed is actually designed to be a fully functional commuting bike, city bike, where you can get around town more than just go down the street. You know, it's a ride around a lot longer kind of bike. So the new SRAM double tap flat bar shifters are really nice, super light action. It's the exact same mechanism that's in their road shifter, just laid out horizontal instead of vertical. So it shifts very smoothly, very precisely, and it very, very crisp and accurate feeling. And it's built around the rest of it is a rival drivetrain on it. So it's with a compact crankset. It's just a very good bike for really getting around and not just, you know, cruising around.
So let's talk a little bit about trends then, because a couple of years ago, road bikes were flying out of the stores.
Yeah.
Is it true that today, because of, well, be it green mentality or gas prices and just the economy in general, are you finding that more bikes like the Solville are being sold than road bikes?
I wouldn't say it's more of them are being sold than road bikes, but I think it's significant that the single-speed fixed-gear market and the city bikes like this, the commuting bikes, the urban bikes, if you will, make up a significant chunk of my business. And out of my top 10 selling bikes this year, six of them were steel, and out of those, four of them were in that category of either a single-speed or something like a Solville. My Speciale Fixed was our number one selling bike for the year, and the Solville was actually number two. And considering this brand's history, I think that's very significant and shows a serious shift in where people are using bikes. And the commuting phenomenon, if you will, seems to be something that isn't going away and finally has enough mass to keep going, and the market itself has reached enough maturity to keep going. I mean, you see brands like Civia. Civia makes some incredibly beautiful bikes, but they are not cheap. So the fact that they're able to sell bikes as well as they are at that price point indicates that there's a level of maturity in the market now that they're willing to absorb those costs because they see the benefit to the bike one way or another, whether it's to their health, whether it's to the environment, or whether it's to not paying for gas.
So are you finding then that a Speciale or a Solville is a second bike for people? And I don't know if you know this, but is it your feeling it's a second bike, or is it that's their bike?
I think I would like to say it's 50-50, and I really am just saying that only on gut feeling. But I know that from a lot of the things that I hear from people is that Solville, for a lot of people, is a first bike. Solville, for another lot of people, is their second or third bike. You know, it's the racer guy who already has a stable full of race bikes who wants a cool bike ends up getting a Solville. And then there's the people who are coming into it from the commuting standpoint of things that are getting it because they see it and it seems functional to them, or they like what it looks like, so they're getting it. So it's the feedback, again, just gut feeling, anecdotal. It seems to me it's probably about 50-50, which is nice. I think there's some longevity in it that way.
You talked about steel bikes being a big deal for you, and you also mentioned earlier your touring bikes.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about those and why they've become so popular, if you know.
I'm not really sure that there's a good answer for why they've gained popularity again. Touring is kind of one of those things that's never gone away. It comes and goes and fits and spurts where all of a sudden it's popular and people are making them, and then it just kind of fades away. But you know, you look at brands like Trek, they've always had at least one touring bike in the line because it's where they started. You know, it's definitely a part of their history. So I don't know that there's really an answer I can give for why. But for us, it's a natural extension of what we're doing with the steel line and just continuing to find other avenues where we can put another bike, you know, because we... Our main touring bike, the Randonneur, is built off of the exact frame as the commuter that we do, just with all the parts bolted to it. So it's just an extension of that bike. And so far, the feedback to it has been very positive. And it's another segment within a niche of the market that I want to keep addressing and developing further.
Okay, but meanwhile, behind you and around us, I'm still looking at sort of the soul or the base of where Mozzie came from, which is your road bikes. What's new for this year?
Well, we've got the 3VC Durace is now using the new 7900 series Durace. We've got the red equipped bike. We've got new colors on other models. I'm test riding a prototype of a new full Scandium frame that I got to ride for an hour last night that is an awfully, awfully nice riding bike. I don't say that just because it's one of mine. It really is a very nice riding tube set, and I'm anxious to see what we can do with it.
Is that what you're racing? Oh, sorry, riding in the Tour of Lake Mead tomorrow?
If I ride the Tour, that's what I'll be on. Yeah, if I can, the ride goes off 8 o'clock sharp, and I got to get a lot of people set up on bikes first, so they get priority, not me, but I will come kitted up and ready to go if I can get down there by 8.
And I say that because Tim kicked everybody's butts last year.
Oh, not everybody's.
Well, Tim, good luck. The line looks great. You look great. It's good to see you. Have a great show.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.
I'm with Dana Carson. We're at the Hutchison booth, and I specifically stopped by, Dana, because I had heard about your tubeless-ready technology in tires. So first, describe tubeless for me, and then describe what it means to be tubeless-ready.
Okay. Traditional tubeless mountain bike tires, they have that squared off tubeless bead and a USD casing. Some of the tires vary in size and in compound and width, obviously, for use, whether it's cross country, enduro, downhill, anything of that nature. With Tubeless Ready, what we've done is we've melded a tubeless bead onto a tube type casing, which has brought the weight down in both 26 inch and in 29er. What it does is it allows you to run tube type on a regular rim with an inner tube, and it gives an inner tube user the opportunity of having a really ultra lightweight tire. And then for somebody who's looking for ultra lightweight on tubeless, it gives them incredibly lightweight. We're at a little bit over 500 grams on our 26 inch tubeless ready tires. So you're looking at a tubeless casing, or excuse me, a tube type casing with a tube. With a tube type bead on it.
Okay, yeah. Got it. So. Well, let's go back and talk a little bit about tubeless for a moment. I've only run tubed tires, whether it's on a mountain bike or on a road bike. And sure, plenty of people do sew-ups and things like that. Tell me what the advantage is to running tubeless.
The number one advantage to running tubeless off-road or on the road with our new road tubeless tires is that there's really no pinch flats. There's no pinching at all. Pinching is done. Impossible. The other issue is when cornering, especially off-road, and with your pressure dialed and your bike dialed in, you get more contact area. And depending on the tire, from whichever brand, but depending on the tire, you get a little bit more pivot or a little bit less pivot in the tire and the contact area while you're cornering.
Okay, so you're going to basically, to boil that down, you're going to corner better.
Exactly. The same applies for the road.
And of course, not only will you corner better, but you'll be more confident in your bike's ability to get through that corner.
Absolutely. You're getting more contact patch area, road or mountain, with a tubeless tire, and that always is going to elicit more confidence.
Now, whether it's road or mountain, and I want to get to road in a second, any rolling resistance difference when you're talking about a tubeless versus a tube tire, or does that come down to the compound and the tread more than anything?
Off-road, it really depends on the tire, compound, tread, and also the bike setup. Generally, there is a certain percentage of rolling resistance that's better with tubeless. But again, it varies tremendously depending on the setup of the bike and also the terrain and tire usage. But on the road, definitely 30% less rolling resistance.
Wow.
Yes.
You'll be faster with these tires.
Absolutely. And at lower air pressures, so safer for flatting and everything.
Okay, so you mentioned briefly mounting the tire. Is it more difficult to mount a tubeless or tubeless-ready tire?
It is more difficult to mount a tubeless-ready tire versus a traditional tubeless mountain tire. The main reason for that is that the tubeless-ready tire, it is a tubeless bead that's basically attached to a tube-type casing. So there is not a larger built-up structure inside to hold the tire shape while it's being mounted.
Now, on the roadside, how many different models of tubeless or tubeless-ready tires are you offering, and what sort of special wheels do people have to use?
Gotcha. The key thing fundamentally on road is we're the pioneers of tubeless road technology. We do not offer tubeless-ready technology on the road. You can't do tubeless-ready on the beads because the air pressures are so much higher than on a mountain bike. We launched our first tubeless tire, for road 2 years ago, and now we're launching two more additional tires. We have three now that we're launching at Interbike this year, and that goes along and parallels what we've been doing with additional wheel manufacturers. You have to use specific wheels with road tubeless, and currently we have Shimano, Fulcrum, and Campagnolo on board. So it's growing. The tide is growing.
Great. Now, on the tubeless, when you're running these tires tubeless, let's talk about inflation, what you recommend there.
Generally, with road tubeless tires, you run much lower air pressure. For instance, on our Fusion 2 inner tube tire, at my body weight, I ride that tire at 120 PSI. When I ride road tubeless, I ride it at 100. So much, much less.
And one of the fallacies, of course, that people have is the higher the pressure, the lower the rolling resistance. That's not entirely true, is it?
That's not true. Right. No, not true at all.
And what about I'm out on the road or I'm on the trail and I've got an issue. I now need to reinflate the tire. Maybe I've had something go through the tire. What do you recommend there, especially when it comes to repairing it, since there's no tube? What do I do?
If you're riding off-road on tubeless, whether it's tubeless ready or UST, there's a couple options. You can carry a tubeless patch kit if you have a larger puncture or cut, and then you can try reinflating with fast air or some other type of air propellant on the trail. Or, you know, with tubeless ready technology, you can use a traditional inner tube and do a regular flat fix while you're out on the trail. On the road, the same thing applies. You can, on a tubeless tire, if you do flat out on the road, you can do a traditional flat repair and put an inner tube in. You just unscrew the tubeless valve, pop an inner tube in, and you're good to go. The other thing on the road that a lot of people are doing is carrying fast air and using the fast air latex inflation. It's a small can, and just inflating and sealing, spinning the wheel, and it seals up the puncture.
Okay, and the question on everybody's lips, price difference between these kinds of tires and a more traditional tubed tire.
The price difference is roughly between 10 to 20% more, depending on the model and on the category. The tubeless technology on the road is a very, very high-tech process, requiring the use of a carbon fiber-enhanced bead because of the air pressures. So because of that, it's a very meticulous process, and the bead construction is also a very, very meticulous process, so there's a little bit more labor involved.
So in that case, then, people are going to ask about durability. If they're paying more and they've got a more sophisticated bead, what about durability?
The durability is very good. I mean, mileage is very good, just like any other really, really good quality high-end clincher. One of the things we've done this year is we've added the intensive in-road tubeless, which is our traditional high-mileage, tough sidewall training tire. So we're doing a road tubeless version of that for 2009. So for current road tubeless users who want a winter tire or a spring training tire when the sides of the road are really bad and they're worried about punctures, that's the tire for them. It's a tough road-specific tire.
Excellent. Anything else we need to know?
No, other than that, we're pushing forward with road tubeless. We have Campy, Fulcrum, and Shimano on board as wheel partners and two additional models, and we're very, very excited about growth in 2009.
Great. Thanks so much, and good luck at the show.
You too. Thank you.
By the way, one of the things that Dana wanted me to mention that he forgot in the interview was the fact that Hutchinson is also now making tubeless technology cross tires. And I think that that's a real testament to the flexibility, the durability, and the dependability of tubeless technology. If you can use them in cross, you can use them in mountain bikes. I think that they're definitely going to last on your road bike as well. So go ahead and check those out. Again, links to all of these products will be in the show notes at www.thefredcast.com. Let's continue with the interviews I did today at the Interbike Outdoor Demo.
I'm with Jill from Haro, and I ride a Haro mountain bike, as we were just talking about. I ride a Sonix S, but tell me what's new from Haro for this year.
Well, the newest bike that we're demoing this year are our Beasley series, and they're a 650 wheel hardtail series that we have. We have a single speed, a Beasley SS, and a Beasley 1x9, with the SS being single speed and the 1x9 being one gear in the front, nine in the back. Both bikes are made of steel. They're fully rigid. Benefit of 650B, you might ask, and a lot of people out there might not know what 650B is. Benefit of 650B is you get the benefit of having big wheels, but you get to still utilize proven 26-inch wheel frame geometry. Basically, both of these frames utilize the same geometry based off of a very successful cross-country frame design that we had. Very minimal tweaks to the frame geometry. It had to lengthen the chainstays a little bit, raise the bottom bracket height, drop the top tube just to accommodate a taller riding bike. So they're a great compromise. A 29-inch wheel mountain bike, they're a lot of fun. Not terribly ideal for shorter riders. So this is a great platform for people who want a big wheel bike, but they don't want the feeling of a great big bike.
So we've got the 650Bs, we've got the 29ers, yet we've still got the 26-inch bikes. Where do you put those in the mix?
Well, you know, we really feel there seems to be a lot of camps developing that, you know, there are some people who feel, oh, 29 is it. It's the be-all, the end-all. That's the only bike I should have. A lot of people are the same 650B. Oh, it's the be-all, the end-all. You know, some people still really believe in 26. But for us, it's really, it's choice. It's just another wheel size. They can all peacefully coexist together. 26ers have a lot of advantages. You know, they spin up to speed a lot faster. They're a lot, you know, easier to ride and tight, twisty single track. You know, you don't have the benefit of the bigger wheels, so, you know, you don't roll over obstacles quite as easily. You don't have the contact patch, you know, like a big wheel, like a 650B or a 29er. But, you know, you do. There are a lot of benefits. It's just, to us, it's another choice. And we still have a full range of 26-inch wheel bikes as well.
So your Beasleys are your 650B. Tell me about your 29ers.
29ers, we have two different 29er models. We have our Mary series, which is our higher-end steel version, and we have an Alloy series, which is our Alloy series. It has a little down market as far as spec and pricing is concerned. Here at Dirt Demo, we have the Mary series. We have the SS single speed and the XC 9-speed bikes, and they're doing real well for us.
Now, there was a school of thought years ago that steel was actually the lower end of the spectrum. Tell me a little bit about your perspective on that.
Well, steel, our particular bikes, our Mary bikes, are made by one of the finest factories. They, in fact, there's quite a few manufacturers who use this particular factory over in Taiwan. They make some very, very high-end bikes. Steel rides like nothing else. It's lively. It's compliant. You know, the perception would be that, you know, they're heavy and they're clunky. And, you know, sometimes there can be a little bit of a weight disadvantage with steel, but, you know, you can make the tubing a lot thinner. So oftentimes when you weigh an alloy bike against an alloy frame, against a steel frame, there's really not that much difference. You know, for us, we tend to put the steel on the higher end because the frames are more expensive for us to make because it comes from such a high-end factory, versus the alloy frames, a little bit less expensive for us to make because it comes from a different factory.
Okay, so I'm a traditionalist. I ride a 26-inch Sonix S. What's new in your 26-inch this year?
What's new for 26? Well, we still do the full range of Sonix bikes. New for this year would be our Sonix Comp, which is very similar to last year's Sonix S. It's just a little, the specs a little bit different, colors are a little different. We're also introducing a Sonix Expert bike, which kind of replaces last year we did a Sonix Works bike, our Works Sonix bike, that was a very, very expensive $4,500 to $5,000 retail bike. You know, with the economy doing what it's doing, we've kind of, you know, shifted gears a little bit. People we're finding aren't spending quite that much money on bikes anymore, so we've kind of shifted down. It's not quite as pricey. It runs about $3,500.
Anything else we should know about Haro for 2009?
Wow. Go to your bike shop and see it.
Sounds good. And where can we find you on the web?
www.harobikes.com.
Excellent. Have a great show.
Thank you. You too.
I'm in the FRS booth. I'm with Jim Murphy. He's one of the VPs of FRS. Jim, tell me briefly about FRS. We see it everywhere. We see Lance Armstrong's face on it. What is it, and why, as a cyclist, should I be interested in it?
Well, David, first let me just simplify it. Quite simply, it just unlocks your body's natural adrenaline. So what a cyclist should look at is that it can improve your performance on the bike just by unleashing that the body's natural adrenaline. You kind of know how you feel when you first start a ride, and that's what we're attempting to continue into the ride. And that's what FRS does with the use of quercetin, a high-powered antioxidant.
Okay, quercetin, big word. A lot of people haven't heard of it. What does it mean?
Well, you get it every day. You're going to get it in apples, red onions, grapes, the skin of the grape. All those things are quercetin properties, and we use a high-quality quercetin in our product, 99.9%. quercetin to fuel our product.
And so what does quercetin do for the human body?
What quercetin does is it's a high-powered antioxidant, and what it would do, it's in, our name is FRS, free radical scavengers, and what it's going to do is neutralize the free radicals that are in your system. So after a long ride or hard day at work, it neutralizes the oxidants that your body builds up and simply removes the fatigue from those oxidants that are in your system.
So there's a lot of products out there, Red Bull and 5-Hour Energy, and you drink them and you feel jittery for a while, and then you kind of crash. What's the difference between what they're doing and what you're doing? And, of course, they're also using a lot of caffeine. What about you?
Well, we're not stimulant-based, and so that's the biggest difference between us and a Red Bull, a Red Lion, a Monster. And the fact is that what we do is we offer sustained energy through the use of antioxidants as opposed to caffeine, taurine, glucuronolactone, lactone, all those things that you hear the big guys use. We don't use those in our product, and it allows the body naturally to unleash the body's natural adrenaline.
And it comes in a variety of different forms. I mean, you've got two different drinks here that are in cans and some other forms as well. Tell me about that.
Sure. That's really the exciting part about FRS. After 3.5 years of Red Bull, I knew it was an 8.3-ounce can. And now we've got something here that's not stimulant-based, not to mention it comes in four different formats. Powders, chews, concentrates, and, of course, what you tried today, our ready-to-drink FRS 11.5-ounce can.
And you've got a low-cal as well.
We do. The low-cal is just a way to get consumers the same natural energy without using what we use in our regular natural orange and natural lemon-lime, which is a pure cane sugar. We use sucralose in the low-cal to allow you to enjoy FRS without the joys of calories.
But for people who may be concerned about the calories in the regular drink, how many calories are we talking about?
Well, if you look at a typical drink, natural orange, you're talking about 40 calories in a serving. It's really not a lot if you're talking about cyclists. I mean, you really want that sugar when you go for a ride, but not every day are we riding the bike, so that's why we've got the low-cal version.
So for cyclists, when do you recommend that they drink it? Before, during, after?
Absolutely key. You know, somebody tried today to compare it to Gatorade. We say this is a pre-ride or a post-ride drink. It's really good to get energy started in your system 30 to 45 minutes before the ride, which is going to help unlock that sustained body's natural adrenaline. And then as a post-ride, because of the free radical scavengers, it takes all the oxidants out of your system and neutralizes those post-ride. So don't forget to use your Gatorade, though, during the ride, or anything else, Cytomax or anything else you're using for hydration.
Okay. What about the Lance Armstrong connection? Tell me about that.
We're very happy to be involved with Lance. Lance sits on our board, so he's one of our board of directors. He's a user, which is probably the most important thing.
Oh, by the way, you mean a user of FRF.
I do indeed. Absolutely, yes. He's a user of FRS. And it's just great to have him. It's great to see him back on the bike at age 37. We also, you know, for every case we sell, we give a dime to the Lance Armstrong Foundation, Live Strong. And we think that's an important link to Lance as well.
Where can people find FRS?
FRS is really, I mean, if we're talking to the bicycle community, we're trying to get more and more bike shops every day through our partner Paceline products. It's also available at GNCs across the country. And we're just now starting to build up our distribution and retail with some specialty grocery stores, Albertsons and the like. Or Amazon.com if you want to go somewhere else.
Excellent, Jim. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
So when I interviewed Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles earlier today, he specifically mentioned the Civia brand, and I'm here with Scott Thayer from Civia. For those people who aren't standing here looking at these gorgeous bikes, tell me about the brand.
Sure. Civia is a new brand. We launched last year at Interbike, and we've got two models out now. We have the Highland, which is our faster, more performance-oriented commuting bike. It's designed for rides from 10 to 15 miles, and we had the consumer in mind that already had a high-end road bike or a mountain bike. They were going to understand what an Altegra 105 or 105 Dura-Ace type ride was going to be. We wanted them to be able to get on this and say, wow, this is a bike that I can identify with. So we've got an aluminum frame, we've got a carbon fiber fork, we've got racks and fenders that are all designed as one, so the look's really clean. We've got smart cable routing on there. And the price point going forward for 2009, we've got a 3-speed version coming in at $1,550 and a 14-speed roll-off at $3,300. So that's kind of the bookends. And we've got an 8-speed version for $2,050 that's in the middle. Our new offering, the Loring, this is designed for a different user. It's somebody that's going to be doing shorter distances, like 2 to 5 mile. It's basically a grocery getter bike. So it's a much more upright riding position, swept back handlebars. It's got a front basket that's an aluminum frame with bamboo slats on it. So it's a really aesthetically pleasing, looks really sharp. You've got a matching bamboo deck rack in the back. Bamboo fenders, steel frame, I probably mentioned that already. We're offering that in a 3-speed and a 9-speed version, and it retails for $1,380 at the 3-speed and $1,610 for the 9-speed. Basically, we're just trying to make bikes with a specific user in mind, as opposed to coming up with, hey, we need a bike in this market, and then let's try and figure out who we're going to sell it to. So we start with the consumer and go from there.
So this is not my mom's commuter bike, is it?
Probably not. I mean, the Loring potentially could be, and that's the more upright riding position. But we're generally looking at our customer as being somebody that's already into cycling, or if they're not, it's somebody that in other areas of their life, they're already used to looking at that mid to high-end product. It's like, okay, I've got a hobby, I'm interested in spending some money on it so I get good quality stuff, and it's going to last and perform well the whole time I have it.
So what has been the reaction to the brand and to the bikes?
The reaction's been really positive. Everybody that sees the bikes just comments, they look really sharp. And the question there then becomes, is this something that can sell in my area? Because we came into the market at a price point that really hadn't been done. And what we found is that when they first start thinking about it, they can't really envision it, but then they bring one or two into the shop, and next thing they know, they've sold 5 or 6, and they've got some more on the floor. So it's been positive, and especially with gas prices and everything else, the people's minds are definitely being opened.
See, it makes sense to me, and probably to a lot of my listeners, high-end road bike rider who, has spent a fair amount of money on that carbon fiber nice road bike and wouldn't be caught dead on some of the more traditional commuting bikes. But a bike like this with, like you said, the roll-off hub, disc brakes, these gorgeous bamboo fenders. Yeah. I mean, this is a bike that I definitely would be caught on.
Exactly. I mean, what caught us off guard is that some of the shops that were most interested in us were high-end road, almost like boutique shops where they do custom fittings. And when we talk to them, we say, yeah, we do transportation bikes. And they're like, we're not interested. That's just not us. And then we show them the product, we get them on it, they ride it, and they're like, wow, this isn't transportation. This is a really nice road bike. It's not just a $500 bike with a big price tag on it. There's something more to it.
Tell me about the name.
Civia. Yeah, it's a name that we came up with, and it's a combination of two Latin words, civis and via. Civis is the Latin word for citizen, and via is for the way. And so it's basically us saying that the bicycle and we think our bikes are the way for citizens to get out and, be a part of their community.
So I know you have a growing dealer network. Where can people find out more about your bikes?
You can find us online at civiacycles.com. We've got our updated dealer list there. Right now we're at about 25 dealers, and we're targeting getting to 60 or 70 by the end of 2009.
It's awesome. It's a beautiful brand. I really recommend everybody go check it out. Have a great show.
Thank you.
Well, last year, you may remember that I rode a bike. My favorite bike from the outdoor demo all last year was the Stork Fascinario. And we interviewed Marcus, who is the designer and owner of Stork. And I've now got Dave here. And Dave, we were looking at the Fascinario. When you walked up, I was looking at it. And then you started to tell me about some of the other bikes. Now, last year, the impression was Stork was for the ultra high end. But one of the great things is there's some other bikes out there for people who maybe can't spend for a Fascinario. Tell me about this first bike we're looking at here.
Sure. This is the Absolutist 0.9. And the 0.9 is what we feel is an amazing bike because it still is extremely stiff, still extremely light, but also comfortable, and that's a key. But it's at a price point that's more accessible to more people. For a frame set, it's $3,200 MSRP. And the way we build it up, we spec it with red. And fully built, it's $6,500 retail. And, for that person who's maybe looking for something a little bit different than, say, a Specialized Tarmac or something like that, here's an opportunity to ride something that's truly unique that maybe catch a lot more attention when you go to that Saturday morning road ride to show up on a Stork. And just a phenomenal bike. We've had tremendous response to this.
So let's go back to last year. Rode the Fascinario, and the thing about the Fascinario that I found was that it was light, it was stiff, it still absorbed the road when it needed to. But then there's a little portion of this course where you make a U-turn, and then you have to go up a hill. And so I stood up, and I started to really hammer, and the bike just shot out from out in front of me. Is that what people say about these bikes?
Exactly. That's the number one impression that people get when they ride the bikes. You know, the efficient transfer of energy. One of the things that stands out about Storks is the rear entry dropouts. And some people say, well, why do you use those? And a perfect example is what you just described there. When you drop the hammer on these bikes, all that power is transferred to that back wheel and it moves. And when maybe some people haven't tried rear entry dropouts and they haven't experienced the stiffness that Storks have, you add those two together and it's a powerful combination.
And so are those same characteristics coming down to the 0.9?
Exactly, yep. And that's what we're trying to do. You'll notice that for 09, we have a couple new models in the lineup, including the Absolutus 0.9. We also are going to introduce the Absolutus 1.0 here at Interbike. And what you're finding is that we're taking the exceptional riding characteristics that have been offered previously in the Fascinario and some, you know, rather expensive models, and we're bringing that down to a price point that's a lot more accessible to more people.
Now, you were also telling me about a bike that is sort of a merging of two of your models. Tell me about that.
Marcus kind of has a reputation of being the mad scientist. And so he was back in his laboratory, if you will, and he decided it would be an interesting experiment to take an Absolutist and a Fascinario and kind of merge them together. And then to add another layer of newness to it, put use UD fiber, which is the first time Marcus has used unidirectional fiber. And so he did it, tried it, tested it, and was just blown away by the results. He had no idea what he was creating. I mean, he knew it was going to be good, but the results were just off the charts. Many people are familiar with our Fascinario 0.7 IS, which is a limited production model. We limited that to 100 units per year. And that has been tested and confirmed to be the lightest and stiffest bike in the world. The Phenomenalist almost matched the numbers from the 0.7. Now, the 0.7 IS has a price point for the what we call the fuselage, which is the frame, the fork, ceramic headset, and power arm crankset. The price point on that package right there is $9,500. The new Phenomenalist, which is the merger of the Absolutist and Fascinario, that will have a price point of for the frame set of $3,800. So it's just, you know, we're taking a bike that is just truly, truly a dream bike and bringing it down to a price point that really a lot of us can afford.
So where can people find out more information, and do you have shops where they can take a test ride?
Yes, most definitely. In terms of finding out more information, a great place is our website, which is storkbicycle.com/USA.
And by the way, that's S-T-O-R-C-K.
Correct. And in terms of test rides, most definitely, we're adding new dealers all the time. They could check our dealer network on our website. Also, we do demo tours. We're basically concluding our 08 demo tour in the next 30 days, but we're going to be out and about in 09. So if you don't have a dealer in your area currently, either one, give us a call, or two, check out our demo tour, because we cover a lot of areas, even some where we don't have a dealer.
Dave, thanks so much for your time. Good luck at the show.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. About six interviews with some folks who really have some great products. I urge you to check those out. Again, in the show notes, you will find the links at www.thefredcast.com. As I mentioned earlier, a couple of program notes for this week. So today is Monday, tomorrow is Tuesday, and tomorrow is the last day of the outdoor demo. It begins with what's supposed to be a recreational ride, about 25 miles. It's called the Tour of Lake Mead. What I learned last year is that it's really no more than a race. It's a time for industry guys to and gals, of course, to, earn some bragging rights for the next year. It starts out fast as we head from Bootleg Canyon down into the Lake Mead Recreation Area, and then a turnaround where they have some water and some snacks for us, and then a ride back, which is mostly climbing. But that first half, There's no doubt about it. That's a race. And I sort of hinted at that when I talked to Tim Jackson early in the show today. So that's a lot of fun. And then, of course, the outdoor demo continues tomorrow, and I'll get some more interviews and do some bike tests and come back to you tomorrow with that information. Then Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is the actual indoor portion of the show. And if I didn't mention it earlier, Interbike is a trade-only event. So this is for retailers, manufacturers, distributors, and the media. Unfortunately, they do not allow consumers in, something we've talked about numerous times on the Spokesman podcast. Speaking of the Spokesman podcast, we are going to, once again, as we did last year, do a live version of The Spokesman on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, at 1 o'clock Pacific time, thanks to Cycling.tv, Sportgenic, and Interbike, all of whom are putting on the Interbike Media Center. And at the Interbike Media Center, they have a television studio, and all throughout the indoor portion of the show, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they put on television shows by a variety of different publishers and media folks, and we have studio time at 1 o'clock Pacific time on Wednesday. We'll be doing a half-hour show live on video of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. I know for sure on the show this week will be, of course, me, David, from the Fredcast, and we'll have Carlton Reed from BikeBiz.com, Donna Tosi from Kryptonite. We'll also have Tim Grawl from Commute by Bike, and we will also have Fritz from Cyclicious. We are hoping that the Mozzie guy, Tim Jackson, will be able to stop by at least for a little while, but I'm expecting that we're going to have a very good conversation on the trends in the industry, what we see going on here at Interbike, and of course, what's going on in the general cycling world. I have a feeling that the name Lance Armstrong may come up considering his comeback, and we haven't had a chance to talk about that on The Spokesman. Then on Thursday night, there is an opportunity for those of you who are here in the Las Vegas area to come out, meet, and spend some time with us when we, along with CommuteByBike.com and BikeHugger.com, will be putting on the Mobile Social Interbike, thanks to a number of sponsors, including Sportgenic. And we will be starting at the Sands Convention Center. We'll be riding from the Sands to Mandalay Bay, where the USA Criterium Finals will be taking place. So you get a chance to see some great racing there. And then after that, the Interbike Industry Cup. It's a chance for industry folks to get out there and have a real race, not just the Tour of Lake Mead, but actually race in a Criterium. And at the Mobile Social VIP tent, you'll have the opportunity to hang out with us, win some great prizes in our raffle. And if you get there early enough, take advantage of the drink tickets that we'll have available there so that you can go to the bar there, which will be right next to our booth at Mandalay Bay, get yourself a libation, enjoy some great racing, and just hang out and talk bikes with us. That's the Mobile Social Interbike, and there's more information at thefredcast.com, bikehugger.com, and commutebybike.com. So we hope to see you here for that. I've been wanting to do that for a number of years. It's a great chance to get together with you all and just talk about bikes. It should be a lot of fun. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Fredcast. We will be back again tomorrow with another show from here at Interbike. I might put it out a little bit late because I get the joy, the pleasure of going out to dinner with my fellow spokesman from the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast and some other friends that are here in town. One of the great things about trade shows, I said this in my Twitter feed today, is the fact that it's like a high school reunion, but these are actually people you've known for 20 years who you want to see when you have these reunions. So I'm looking forward to having a nice dinner with those folks tomorrow, and then I'll have another Fredcast for you, and then the indoor portion of the show will begin. So look forward to talking to you again tomorrow, and instead of our regular PodSafe cycling music here, we're just going out with Jimmy Bratcher and our usual opening music, his song called Happy. It is available on the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. So between tonight and tomorrow night, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.